Well, happy Sabbath, everyone. A flat tire is stress, but it's not the end of the world. And when you hear about people in the prayer requests who have genuine problems, and I just appreciate Mr. Housen taking on a little extra stress and doing all the hymns. When it's funny how many times, and today there's been some switching around, how many times the Jim and I are together on the speaking schedule. So we usually figure out ways to split the piano playing. We have considered both of us doing all the hymns with me on the left and him on the right hand and fighting over the pedal the entire time. But so far, we've worked it out. Well, one of the great things about being retired when you're a Sabbath keeper is that you think that all your Sabbath difficulties will disappear at that point because you no longer have people wanting you to come in to work on Friday nights or something like that. And there are people who really do have tests in that area, very severe trials that affect their life and their livelihood. And so I don't want to belittle that at all. My problems are very small. But one of the things in retirement, that the title of this message is Sabbath Doubts. And if you give a title like that, I think it's only sporting to reassure you that we'll end up in a good place. That if I am removed from the speaking schedule at any time, it won't have to do with this one. We'll get there. Last night we got together with a group of people who I've known for literally 55 years before I met any of you. They were high school friends, but it wasn't so much a high school get-together as just the old gang. We got together in South Euclid in a house that I had spent many hours in as a teen, so it was a little freaky that way, but also kind of fun, and people showed up, and I don't get together with these people very often, but we're all on good terms, and it was a very enjoyable evening. And one of them turned to me out of the blue, a friend, and said, "Well, I understand that you're kind of taking the folk music world by storm these days." And I thought that was my little secret, you know, that I'd quit playing piano professionally, but that Cleveland has quite a folk music scene, and the accordion that I have brought in and tormented you with from time to time actually has stood me in good stead in some circles. English and Irish and Scottish folk music, and keyboard too. And apparently this woman is a friend of a friend of a friend and had heard about this and was asking me about it. And it was funny because it was Friday night, and I'd been bugged all week by a woman who wanted me to come in and play with a band for a Friday night evening. And I thought, that those times were over. I've spent more time explaining. And nowadays, you know, after a while, at first you come up with euphemism excuses like, "Oh, you know, I'll be busy," or "I'll be out of town," which means I've driven 20 miles from my house, you know. But now I just say, "No, Sabbath is from Friday sunset to Saturday sunset, you heathen, and I won't be there." No, actually, I couch it in slightly gentler terms than that. But I don't beat around the bush. I mean, what do I have to lose? And also it's easier for them to understand if they know exactly what the terms are at that point. Well, so last night I got home, and there was a text waiting for me from the Friday night group, kind of wanting to know why I wasn't there and giving me preparation for the next time and things like that. And, you know, these aren't real Sabbath problems. I'm not giving up a job or income or anything like that. But there's sort of annoyances in that I kind of like to do these things, the things I want to do. And, you know, a lot of people twist Sabbath rules to do things they want to do. We had a young woman who was a piano major at the university where I worked, and she was a Seventh-day Adventist, but she had a piece of paper signed that said she could do stuff on Sabbath. And that's just the way it worked for her. So there's, you know, there's things that you want to do, and I find that even after all the years that so many of us have spent in the church together, that I still ask myself from time to time, is it worth it? Is it worth it to keep the Sabbath? is it, you know, I mean, there's many human lines of reasoning where you can sort of figure out a way where you don't have to do it. But every time I run the data, I come to the same conclusion, which is the good one. You'll be happy to know. Like you, I have a personal relationship with God, and my keeping the Sabbath really has to do with that. And when you walk in the door here, by the time you come to our Grafton services, you have already coped with the Sabbath question. When you walk in, I don't need to prove to you that God's Sabbath is real and needs to be observed. You've already come to that conclusion. And the way that you prove this to people, and we have publications, we've had sermons, you've heard, you know, you've had a lot of information on why the Sabbath is kept and why we still keep it today, but those aren't really the reasons that you need when you're trying to prove it to yourself. And the only reason that I'm willing to share the fact with you that I ask myself from time to time, is it worth keeping the Sabbath, is I think you do it too. You know, you just want a reality check. You go through your life and what's right and what's wrong, and you review things, and the fact that you're sitting here means to me that you come to the same conclusion that I do, that we are Sabbath keepers and it's important to be Sabbath keepers. And so I want to give you today four things that I always remember when I'm reproving the Sabbath to myself, because it might be of help to you. And the first is that keeping the Sabbath is really the easiest interpretation of the information that we have. And by information that we have, I mean we have God's word, and we have the evidence in the world around us, in his creation and the way that the world works and things like that. If you leave out the arguments of humans and human reasoning and stick to those things, the need to keep the Sabbath is the easiest, simplest, and most enduring interpretation. They're part of the Ten Commandments. They're a very clear part of the Ten Commandments. Most people who worship God will tell you that they keep the Ten Commandments. But most of those people keep nine of the commandments at a maximum. And we know this. We've all addressed this. Specifically in the wording of the Ten Commandments in Exodus 20, it takes us back to the book of Genesis. It says God created the earth and he rested, and that's why we do it. When people say that the Ten Commandments are done away with, don't believe it. You either, or that one of the Ten Commandments is done away with, don't believe it, because you either keep the tenth or you don't. Nobody argues with you that the law, you shall not kill, is done away with. Nobody argues with you that the law, you shall not steal, is done away with. I mean, we legislate that in our own countries, and it's a group thing. It's part of the way that God worded it. I know sometimes people turn to Mark 10, and this is the incident of the rich young ruler. And in Mark 10, starting in verse 17, they say, well, Jesus named the commandments, but he doesn't mention the Sabbath here. In Mark 10 and verse 17, as Jesus started on his way, a man ran up to him and fell on his knees before him. So it was very dramatic. Good teacher, he asked, what must I do to inherit life? Well, Jesus knew that part of this was an act. So he says, why are you calling me good? Interesting that you would do that. No one is good except God alone. He said, but you know the commandments. Do not murder, do not commit adultery, do not steal, do not give false testimony, do not defraud, honor your father and mother. Teacher, he declared, all these have I kept since I was a boy. And Jesus looked at him and loved him. One thing you lack, he said, go sell everything you have and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. Then come and follow me. Well, if people say those are the only commandments we need to keep and there's others left out, Jesus added a commandment there. The do not defraud is in every translation. That's not part of the Ten Commandments. He wasn't giving a comprehensive list of the Ten Commandments. And if you believe that everything in these verses is something that you have to keep, and you want to not keep the Sabbath for that reason, well then, if you still have a house and a bank account, you haven't obeyed Jesus in verse 21, where he says, one thing you lack, go sell everything you have and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. And there's very few people in human history who have ever done that. But if you're going to take this word for word literally, then that's what you do. You say, well, do you still have a house? Do you still have an income? Do you still pay for your food? you know, it doesn't make any sense. They should, if they literally believe in verses 18 and 19, then 21 becomes a problem. I don't have the faith to not believe that the Sabbath is important. I just don't. It's too hard. It's funny, the echoes that are left in the world from when God created the earth. You know, we've talked about these before, but just the fact that everybody in the world, everybody who has a computer, keeps a seven-day week. And the only reason there is to keep a seven-day week is because God created the earth in 7 days. People who don't believe in God keep a seven-day week. And in many countries, they keep a seven-day week where the word for Saturday is Sabbath. These are just little echoes. I mean, the world's kind of acknowledging, oh, yeah, the seventh day is the Sabbath. And just as interesting, in some languages, the word for Sunday, like domingo or similar words, has to do with it being the Lord's Day. It's not the Sabbath. And calendars are set up, you know, and I think European calendars, some of them begin on Monday, but most of the calendars, the paper, remember paper calendars? Some of you probably still have some. But they start on day one and end on day seven. So those are just little echoes. And it's just too hard to twist all that, to just say, well, yeah, God said that we have to keep the Sabbath, and it goes on forever. The easiest way is to just say, yes, we need to keep the Sabbath. Second, the Sabbath is an important part of God's plan. These are all related to each other, for humans, from beginning to end. If you turn to Genesis 2, and, I mean, you have these verses memorized. Genesis 2, verses 2 to 3. This is the beginning of the Sabbath. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, no gray area there, he rested from all his work. Well, you could say, well, he rested, but do we have to? Well, God blessed the seventh day and made it holy. So, yep, we do. Because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. And when you turn to the first collective listing of the Ten Commandments in Exodus 20, it takes us right back there. Exodus 20 and chapter 8, where the Sabbath command begins, remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. And that's what you need to know. And sometimes when we recite that commandment, that's all we do. But there's more to it. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it, you all these people shall not work. Verse 11, for in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. So it's been around from the beginning. And God, remember, God gave these words to Moses. These aren't words Moses made up. In this year in history, when he gave those Ten Commandments, he's pointing right back to that and saying, still the same, haven't changed. And it's an overarching arc. And you can see, because in Deuteronomy 5, where they're listed again, if you can't find Exodus 20 and you're looking for the Ten Commandments, you can find it in Deuteronomy 5. And when you read the commandments there, it's moved up in history a bit. It starts out the same, observe the Sabbath by keeping it holy as the Lord your God has commanded you. And refers back to the wording in Exodus 20, there's ways he did it. Verse 14, the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God, on it you shall do no work. And then here the reasoning is very current. Very present day. It's not present day for us, but it was for them. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the seventh Sabbath day. So there were reasons at the beginning, reasons in the present day, and then Mr. Thomas did a lot of my work for me on this with his sermon last week, but there's Sabbath in the future and Sabbath at the end. And the author of Hebrews, in chapter 4, the author of Hebrews, matter of fact, the added by the publisher heading of this chapter in my Bible, the New International Version, says, a Sabbath rest for the people of God. And that's a theme in this chapter. And if you go to, verse 7, 9, verse 9, it says, and again, this is New International, but it translates it correctly. Mr. Thomas spoke about this not long ago. There remains then a Sabbath rest for the people of God. Not just a rest, but a Sabbath rest. And that's the original Greek. For anyone who enters God's rest also rests from his own work, just as God did from his. Let us therefore make every effort to enter that rest so that no one will fall by following their example of disobedience. So this carries the meaning and symbolism of keeping the Sabbath to what we call the world tomorrow, when Jesus Christ returns and sets up his kingdom. There's going to be a rest in the future. So we've already made it this far. And then, you know, and we'll get to some of the verses that Mr. Thomas covered last week, that there's going to be Sabbath keeping at the very, 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 very end time. And that's the way that God wants things. It's important to realize that the Sabbath was made for man. There's no reason to think that it existed before Adam. In Mark 2 and starting in verse 27, you know, they were walking through the grain fields and picking grain, and the Pharisees complained about doing what's unlawful on the Sabbath. And Jesus said, have you never read what David did? He picked food, that there's times to do it. And then most importantly, in verse 27 and verse 28, he says, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. And as far as we know, it was created in those verses in Genesis. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. He has the last thing to say about it, and that's that. It goes on. Thirdly, the Sabbath was changed to a different day of the week, historically. But it wasn't changed by God. It was changed by man, and it was changed for the convenience of man. Scholars agree that there isn't an argument that the early Christians kept a seventh-day Sabbath. And, you know, the reasoning they take is, well, they weren't enlightened yet. You know, they hadn't thought it through. And there were still a lot of Jewish people. And you know how Jewish people are. They're big on that Friday sunset to Saturday sunset thing. And, you know, the Latin canon law actually changes the day length to midnight to midnight. But there were early Christians keeping Friday sunset to Saturday sunset. Well, maybe it was because they still remembered things that Jesus said and that the original apostles were with them. Maybe that was the reasoning. Do you think it could be? Interestingly, Sunday Sabbath, keeping Sunday as a Sabbath day, didn't really exist in the pagan world. You know, it was a day of worshiping the sun in some religions. And yet at the same time, it wasn't a Sabbath. It wasn't a don't work. There were religious considerations, but it wasn't a kind of thing where they had to not work and be punished for working if they did. The idea of Sunday changing to a day that had Sabbath laws came from, I think the one source I read phrased it as apostate Christians, you know, people who were part of the flow of the actual church, but who little by little fell away. So even by the time of Constantine, and we paint him as the bad guy, and he deserves it, I think. But you know, by the time we got there, there was already Sunday keeping in the church, and had been for centuries at that point. We know that Constantine, on March 7th, A.D. 321, issued an edict, which was actually a civil law, and it unified the Roman Empire. And I don't know if you've ever read the exact words. I had never read the exact words of the edict. Well, and when I read what I'm calling the exact words, I'm giving you English. I can't understand the exact words that he wrote in. But this is the law. All judges and city people and craftsmen shall rest upon the venerable day of the sun. God's not mentioned, but wow, the sun is right there. Doesn't that ring any bells saying, well, maybe this is wrong if we're going to worship the sun instead of God? The next sentence, country people, however, this was done for convenience. Country people may freely attend to the cultivation of the fields because it frequently happens that no other days are better adapted for planting grain in the furrows or the vines in trenches, so that the advantage given by heavenly providence may not, for the occasion of a short time, perish. In other words, farmers, you're not getting off the hook. Okay, this is for lawyers and emperors and people who live in cities. But if you live on the farm, you better grow food for us. Farmers were not given a Sabbath by that edict. And just as a side note, if you turn to Exodus 34, you can see how this is not at all what God had in mind for a Sabbath. In Exodus 34 and verse 21, talking about the Sabbath, it says, 6 days shall you labor, but on the seventh day you shall rest, even during the plowing season and harvest, you must rest. So it was changed for the convenience of man, and even in Constantine's time, they made loopholes to make sure that it would work to their advantage. Well, you know, the funny thing was, this switch to Sunday was replayed before our very eyes, many of us, when we were part of a Sabbath-keeping church that in the 1990s decided it wasn't a Sabbath-keeping church. And not only was the Sabbath not Sunday, but there was no need to keep any Sabbath whatsoever. At which point, my Presbyterian mother exclaimed, "Well, that's just wrong. We even keep the Sabbath. We just do it on the wrong day." And there were so many questions in my mind after hearing that from Mom, but we never really did discuss it in depth. But she had a point, which leads us to the next thing, is that it was argued that Christians don't need to keep the Sabbath at all. And there was a big change, of course, in switching Sabbath observance from Saturday to Sunday. But Mr. Thomas mentioned this last week. There was a huger, is that a word? Huger change right before the very eyes of many of you. How many of you here remember grocery stores being closed on Sundays? Yes. And you didn't mind because you did, because that was the day that we wanted to shop. We minded, yes, we did. We minded very much. It was particularly hard, I know Taya tells stories, harder for working women, because when do you take the time to shop? Stores in Holland, where she lived, closed pretty close to, you know, the end of workday, 5 or 6 p.m. Saturday wasn't an option, so she would have to take lunchtime off to do her grocery shopping. There were laws all over the world at that point. We called them blue laws here, Sunday laws, that were heavily enforced. And they started out, you know, and these were added after Constantine. There were laws in Pennsylvania in 1794, and this is a quote, "For the prevention of vice and immorality and of unlawful gaming and to restrain disorderly sports and dissipation." And then it prohibited any worldly employment or business whatsoever on the Lord's Day, commonly called Sunday, works of necessity and charity only accepted. And that's the end of the quote. This included, but this is a quote, "and any unlawful game, hunting, shooting, sport, or diversion, whatever." In 1845, Ontario legislation outlawed skittles, ball, football, racket, or any other noisy game, and gambling, racing, fishing, hunting, shooting, and a host of commercial activities. The Perth Zoo was forced by authorities not to run its merry-go-round on Sundays in Australia because of its potential enjoyment value. So we weren't allowed to do things on Sundays. And it was quite severe. I mean, it wasn't just a laughing matter. The labor movement liked it because Sundays was the only day that many of the hardworking people on earth had off from medieval times on. They still had many things that they had to do. But people were arrested. You can read in 1882 in New York City, one day 140 people were arrested for breaking Sabbath laws. There were thousands of people arrested in Ottawa. And when I say arrested, I mean jailed. I mean, literally, one guy said, well, it wasn't so bad. And the other guy said, no, it was rock. We had to pick rocks, you know. It was real prison. In 1911, how many of you have heard of the author Upton Sinclair? He's well known. I'm not going to ask how many of you have actually read any of his books, because they're sort of a slog these days. But he was an important thinker and affected a lot of the nation's thinking with his books, which were bestsellers. In 1911, in Delaware, Upton Sinclair was jailed for playing tennis on Sunday. In 1911, he was thrown in jail. It happened. the story is a little more complicated than that, and it's interesting to look up. But the point is that this changed before my very own eyes, and then many of yours. This changed, and it was changed for the convenience of people. And, you know, you can say one thing, well, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy, and we'll do it on Sunday, but now we're not keeping it at all. We're changing it. Constantine didn't do that. We did it ourselves for convenience. I remember my mother being very upset. And people say, well, it never really was the Sabbath, you know, it was the Lord's Day. Well, I assure you, I grew up in the Presbyterian Church, I assure you it was called Sabbath. We kept a Sabbath, and we, as Mr. Thomas mentioned last week, we would have meals together, we would do picnics, we would have fun. You know, there's jokes about people who are caught playing golf on Sabbath. I could never understand that, because most of my life it's been just fine to play golf on Sabbath. But it dates from those days when people got arrested, literally, for playing golf on Sabbath. I can send you links. It had happened. Well, I think the first one, I remember my mother being very upset. My mother, when she was upset, expressed it in a subtle way. And I don't even know if I can do it, because my saliva level is low right now. But my mother would go, you know the sound, I can't do it. Everybody, help me out here. You know what I mean. My mother would go, oh. And it was kind of a click of the tongue against your mouth, and that was the worst indictment my mother gave to people. And it was because Kmart was open on Sundays. And of course, there's a lot that goes into that. It means workers have to work on those days. It means that people, bear in mind, none of this would take effect at all if people just stayed home and didn't go shopping. But they did go shop. I don't know if you remember, I think it was in the early 70s, because my dad got really excited about the opening of Convenient Food Mart. And there were other dairy stores and things like that, but Convenient Food Mart was, guess what? Convenient, because it was open hours that other stores were not open. My dad thought this was a wonderful thing, that we could go to Convenient Food Mart at convenient hours on Sunday. My mother had one response. You can guess what it is. Thank you. I appreciate that. And so before our eyes, we have ended up at a time when we have this, when we have Sundays are for Jesus and football. Somehow in people's minds, you can have a Sabbath day and you can have football. So we and I'm saying this, modern society destroyed the Sabbath before God's very eyes, and we did it for our own convenience. Now, I'm not feeling guilty about that, because I certainly wasn't any part of it, and I don't think you were. You know, I love seeing those laws fall. I love being able to do whatever I want and not get thrown in jail on a Sunday. The problem is Saturdays. But think about it. If the second change was done for people's convenience, the first change was too. Changing the Sabbath day, I already showed you that there's an overall arc and arch from the beginning of time, the human time, till the end. And it was only done for people's convenience, so that they could fit in with society better, and Saturday could be the big market day and things like that. Fourth, Sabbath is a sign, an agreement between a child of God and God himself. You know the verse. Let's turn to Exodus 31. It's very clear. It's amazing how much clear information there is on Sabbath. Chapter 31, verse 12, the Lord said to Moses, these are God's words, say to the Israelites, you must observe my Sabbaths. This will be a sign between me and you for the generations to come, so you may know I am the Lord who makes you holy. Observe the Sabbath because it is holy to you. And then it gives, you know, penalty of death at that point. So it's important to God. Thankfully, we don't do that anymore, nor do we need to, but it's clear that Sabbaths are a sign between me and you. Now, you know, sometimes we've interpreted that a different way. We say, well, the Sabbath is a sign. People look at us, outside people, and we're identified as God's people. And that's true. It's definitely an identifying thing. You know, when you're married, you have a wedding ring, generally. When you're a part of God's family in the truest sense, then you keep the Sabbath, and that is a sign in the field guides. It's how you identify one of God's people. is that they keep the Sabbath and the holy days, as Mr. Hausen was talking about. But the verse also says it's a sign between me and you. It's kind of like, you know, wolves don't wear collars, tame dogs do. We're tame. We're domesticated. We've been called out of the world into God's way of life. And the sign is that we willingly keep the Sabbath. The Sabbath was meant to provide a rich well of refreshment for the people who practice. That's a quote from a man named Philip Chan, and I just love it. I remember that when I think of Sabbath, is that it's a rich well of refreshment. And, you know, it's only when people complain about Sabbath, they think about all the rules, many of which were tacked on by Pharisees and other Puritans, other religious figures, New Englanders, Ohioans, you know, it was added on. But the Sabbath is a positive thing, and it's a sign between us and God. And Mr. Thomas talked about that last week. He mentioned some verses in Isaiah that we're going to go to. We're going to go to Isaiah 56, and he was going a different direction with it. Well, not entirely different direction. Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel are some of the most wonderful words of God to read because we call them the major prophets. And one of the reasons that they're different from the minor prophets is that most of the minor prophets' prophecies, many of them talk about the future, but they're very specific and very linked to a certain time, sometimes to a single event or, you know, Jonah's story, things like that. Whereas especially Isaiah, out of all three, Isaiah, Jeremiah, and Ezekiel, Isaiah just seems to float through eternity with his words. I mean, he was a very, we know when he lived, we know who was king in Judah. He actually gave them, there's very specific time-specific things about Isaiah, but his prophecies just are about eternity. And God says that he's put eternity in our heart. One of the best ways to do that is to read Isaiah, because he talks about present-day evils, but he talks about Jesus Christ's own human life. He talks about the world tomorrow. He talks about all kinds of things. So it's very uplifting. But in chapter 56, God talks about a club that he has. This is what God, the Lord, says. Maintain justice, do what is right, for my salvation is close at hand, and my righteousness will soon be revealed. So you can tell when in history this is. Blessed is the man who does this, the man who holds it fast, who keeps the Sabbath without desecrating it, and keeps his hand from doing any evil. So people who keep the Sabbath are in a different category for God. They're blessed, and it's one of the things that he looks at for you that's a bond between you and him. You could say, well, yeah, we're not saved by works, and God himself would agree with that. But at the same time, it's a link from the creation of the world to the end of the world between God's people and himself. And as Mr. Thomas pointed out, then it talks about foreigners who say, oh, I can't be part of that, and eunuchs saying, oh, I can't be part of that. And what does God say? He says, no, those physical things aren't as important. In verse 4, to the eunuchs who keep my Sabbaths, who choose what pleases me and hold fast to my covenant, they get the whole package. Foreigners, in verse 6, who keep the Sabbath without desecrating it, who hold fast to my covenant, they get to come to my holy mountain and bring joy in my house of prayer. So it is a sign between us and God, but it's not just an identifying feature. It's a link from our heart to God's heart. It's what keeps us living connected with him, and it's that rich well of refreshment. And then in verse 58, chapter 58, Isaiah goes on in the same frame of mind, and he talks about in starting in verse 8, although it's worth reading the whole thing because, well, no, let's go back, because there's a category here. In verse 1, it says, shout it aloud, do not hold back, raise your voice like a trumpet, declare to my people their rebellion, to the house of Jacob their sins. For day after day they seek me out, and they seem eager to know my ways. Oh God, we love you. Oh God, we want to know what you're doing. Oh God, we want to go to Kmart on Sundays. I mean, these are people who have the facade of righteousness, and in all fairness, in their hearts, they might really, really, really want to serve God and think that they are. But in verse 2, it says, as if they were a nation that does what is right, but they're not. That's the whole point. And has not forsaken the commands of God. They ask me for just decisions and et cetera, et cetera. So these are people, this message is being given to people who think they're obeying God, but they found ways around his commandments. And we're supposed to show them and tell them that they're wrong. And so in verse 8, talking about people with the link to God, then your light will break forth like the dawn, and your healing will quickly appear. Then your righteousness will go before you, and of course that's righteousness from God, and the glory of the Lord will be your rear guard. You will call, and the Lord will answer. You will cry for help. And it goes on, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. And to establish the time frame, in verse 12, your people will rebuild the ancient ruins and will raise up the age-old foundations, and you will be called repairer of broken walls, restorer of streets with dwellings. And when is that? I don't need to prove to you that that's either end time or world tomorrow. That's when that happens. Oh, verse 13. If you keep your feet from breaking the Sabbath and from doing as you please on my holy day, if you call the Sabbath a delight and the Lord's holy day honorable, and which day did God specifically say was the Sabbath? Well, if you honor it by not going your own way and not doing as you please or speaking idle words, then you will find your joy in the Lord, and I will cause you to ride on the heights of the land and to feast on the inheritance of your father Jacob. The mouth of the Lord has spoken. And at that point, I'm done doubting the Sabbath anymore. And I'm thinking to myself, the verse in Colossians 2 and verse 16 and 17, and thinking to myself, you people can play your folk music on Friday nights and Saturday afternoons if you want to, but I shall continue to do it on Sundays and Thursdays because I have a link with God. And in verse 16, it says, therefore, do not let anyone judge you by what you eat or drink or with regard to a religious festival, a new moon celebration, or a Sabbath day. It's our link to God, and we're not letting go with it. And no matter what other people think, we're not going to give it up. Will Sabbath challenges stop? Not till the day we die. Will we continue to ask ourselves, is the Sabbath worth keeping? Yes, we will. Will we ever stop keeping the Sabbath? I truly doubt it.